Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? And get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Today, we are so thrilled to be here with Berna Anat. She is a finance expert and the host of Betches' new podcast, Money Please, which premiered today. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. We were just talking about how it is, I'm in PT, it's morning over here, yeah. So the energy is a little manic, a little like one banana, walked my dog energy, but I'm super, super psyched, very hyped to be here. Thank you for having me.
So much can be fixed by having one banana, though.
Just a single
banana can change the course of an entire day. I'm sure that's what the first episode of Money Please is about.
It's a very budget-friendly way to change the course of your day, for sure.
The power of eating one banana.
One banana a day? Like, look out, Trader Joe's. I will be there once a month. Get my bananas and freeze them. No, it's a one banana morning, and then in like 3 hours, and my body's going to be like, hey, remember me?
Right.
Use the rest of that budget. Feed me, please. Come on. You got money like that.
Yeah, exactly. So we at Betches have been so excited for this podcast. It's something that... you know, finance and budgeting and money is a topic that has been really important to a lot of our listeners across all of like Betches platforms and interest areas. And we talk about it on SUP from different angles a lot. So we're so thrilled to be able to talk to you on such an exciting day.
I am super psyched to be able to just plug the subject of money into everybody's noise canceling headphones on every topic. I mean, I don't need to tell you, but money touches everything and everyone. It is being compromised under capitalism. We all think about money all the time, but we talk about it so little, right? And so I'm ready to just weave it all in. Every week we're going to be weaving it into all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like you got to this already, but I feel like you're such a perfect person to host this podcast, because like you said, there are a lot of kind of like conflicting advice and ideas and lots of structures that impact how we can spend and use our monies beyond just like whether we have the willpower. So we're going to like dive right into it. A lot of what we talk about on the SUP podcast is how advice like just stop buying the lattes, just stop buying the avocado toast really ignores the structural barriers to financial stability for so many people, particularly minorities and women. So I'm curious, as you've approached the podcast, how are you going to balance that financial advice and best practices with like recognizing those factors that are kind of out of people's control, but are still like very, very much factor in?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, one of the reasons we wanted to do Money Please is, and we say this in the trailer and everything, is so we can stop taking advice from these hot breath boomer Facebook Twitter uncles who think that because of whatever privileges that they came up into in their lives, it means that they bootstrap their way to whatever victory or, you know, platform that they're on, and that the rest of us just need to stop eating avocado toast. Like, I thought that song was over like 3 years ago, but apparently it's not if you look on Twitter. And so Money Please was created so that we don't have to listen to that stuff anymore. First of all, we grew up with so much financial shame, irrespective of like the economy itself and like current events and all that stuff. Just in our own homes, there's a lot of financial effery happening there. And we can talk more about that. But then we get into the world and I'm sorry. The economy is our fault because of avocado toast. Is that a joke? So like $1.7 trillion in student loans is because we have a Starbucks addiction. Is that why? Absolutely not. I think it's just time to hard stop listening to people whose financial lives don't relate to ours. We can't get financial advice from folks like that anymore. We have to rely on ourselves, on the many, many incredible educators who actually speak our language, who have lived our lives, who have our amount of student loans and financial baggage and financial emotional baggage, because financial trauma is a thing. I'm just super excited to finally be one of the people holding the mic, but also passing the mic to so many other financial educators who get it, who understand that, like, we don't need more of that nonsense shame from people who don't even live or look or speak or spend like us.
Yeah, that's what I think distinguishes this show from a lot of other sort of money ones, is that, like, you're not just week to week, like, here's what you're doing wrong with your budgeting. You're inviting people with varied perspectives to answer people's questions, and, like, everybody has something different to offer. So I feel like that hand over the mic approach is really, really important.
Yeah, that's I resonated so much with what you were saying. I have such a vivid memory of having a conversation with a family member of mine where they were, you know, going off about millennials and how irresponsible we are and how we don't buy houses and da-da-da. And after interrogating them a little bit, I found out that, like, they were able to pay for college just by working part-time. Like, they could, like, that's not, that doesn't exist for anyone at this time. This is also a relative who said in that same conversation that all millennials care about is windsurfing. And I'm not really sure where they got that.
I can feel the hot breath. I can feel the hot breath.
Yeah, exactly. I want to live in that world. I would love to only care about windsurfing.
I would love.
It's not the reality for a lot.
I've never even been windsurfing one time because I can't afford to go.
Right? I'm sorry. I guess my Starbucks money has buried me under enough debt that I cannot enjoy things like windsurfing like all of you do, other millennials. But that's so true. It's like, it's at this point, it's like, I cannot believe, like, we're still having to listen to this, like, boring ass song about it's your fault and you're ruining this economy, you're ruining that economy. We are ruining our own lives and mental health. We're too busy ruining ourselves to ruin any kind of economies. Maybe we're not buying houses because that shit is way too expensive right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, thank you. That shit is way too, I mean, I live in the Bay Area. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, okay, Ohlone territory. It is expensive as a mother effer out here. So obviously we're not buying homes. Right. Oh, you're not having babies, you're not doing all these things because we can't afford to, Karen, Chad. Mm-hmm. We can't. So again, hot breath.
Or our parents aren't helping us, Karen and Chad.
Karen and Chad, why don't you give me your kids' loan that you gave to them?
Put that part on with the Instagram caption about your new house.
Okay, where's all your asteriskuses about, like, new home? Because my Karen and Chad dad bought it for me. Like, okay. My parents, precisely, incredible immigrants from the Philippines. I'm first gen Filipino American. They immigrated from the Philippines. And we don't have Karen and Chad money.
Yeah.
We don't have I got you on the down payment money. Mm-hmm. And so many of us don't have we got you on the down payment family money. And so, again, we need to be taking our financial advice from people who live like us.
Totally. And I feel like the sort of benchmarks for financial success just have not been adjusted to sort of, like, meet the current moment. I mean, we've talked about how, you know, people act like millennials or people in our age group, or really maybe anybody who hasn't achieved those typical benchmarks, is, like, frivolous or disorganized with their money. But especially these days, people have such real financial burdens. You touched on this already, but I know a lot of our listeners have student loan debt. A lot of people, they might fully support a family member, or they have insane childcare costs. There are so many things, like, standing in the way of them achieving those traditional benchmarks. How are you going to approach, like, what is a successful financial life? How are you going to frame and define that on Money Please?
Oh my gosh. First of all, let us throw out the successful financial benchmarks, because those were created by the Karen and Chad. Mm-hmm. Okay. Love that for them. Back when they can work their, like, you know, burger counter for the summer, froyo on the boardwalk job, and then buy a beautiful home, right, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So cute. Wind love surfing. That for you. Well, I was just going to say, please take that windsurfing energy elsewhere now, because the economy is different, culture is different, society is different, our awakening inside of capitalism is different. It's all different now. And I would hope, my hope with Money Please and with all the rest of our financial lives, is that we can define these financial benchmarks for ourselves. You know, it just makes no sense that we give each other these markers, these ladders and rules, when we don't have the same financial standing. There's no financial equity in this country. And so it's incredibly unfair to be like, bad bitches buy houses. Okay, they do, but not all of us can afford it. Or like, oh, bad bitches get rid of their student loans 2 years out of college. No, we can't define these things for each other. We have to define them for ourselves. And the way that we define them for ourselves is we have to take a very intensive sometimes traumatizing, sometimes triggering look at the way that our financial lives have rolled out in our lives, mm-hmm. in our homes, in our culture. You know, there's a lot, thank goodness, there's so much conversation now about mental health and unpacking your childhood stuff and getting help to do that and understanding the connection between, oh, this stuff happened growing up and that's why this stuff, well, that's partially why this stuff is happening in my brain as an adult. Same exact thing with finances. We have to understand the privileges that we have enjoyed in our lives, the disadvantages that we have that have been put upon us in our lives, the systemic ways that many of us have been effed completely financially from the system. And then once we do that, we realize that like the benchmarks are BS. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to survive. We're just, again, compromised under capitalism. We are just trying to make it through. And there's so many exceptions and asterisks and compromises that we have to make in order to survive in this kind of system. And so just throw it out. Throw that shit out. You know, like it's, we have to really come with a clearer sense of like financial empathy for each other and especially for ourselves when we're looking at these ooh fancy cute Instagram ass benchmarks, mm-hmm. and understand like the caption can only be so long and right. people's yeah. mental capabilities to examine themselves can only go so far.
That's very true.
Just ignore that shiz. Ignore that
yeah.
shiz.
I love that phrase that you just said, financial empathy, because that you know, there's so much about people's issues with money. It's such an emotional and personal thing, as you were just saying. So, like, yes. what was it in your background or your family's relationship with money or what you saw going on financially growing up that informed your view?
Oh, goodness. It definitely was not money. I come from, this is important to say for folks who are about to listen to Money, Please. I am not a financial, like, expert. That means you can't sue me, one thing. I'm an enthusiastic, finance-obsessed bestie. I got my degree in public relations from USC mm-hmm. on scholarship, okay? I wanted to be a magazine editor growing up. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff that I learned that I'm sharing on Money, Please, all self-education, all University of Google, all quote-unquote School of Hard Knocks. My own financial background is zero, okay? My mom was a customer service agent at United, an SFO, for 35 years. My dad was a postal service mail carrier for almost 40 years.
Awesome.
Both retired now, living their best. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, they immigrated from the Philippines. They came here. They had us. We did their best to assimilate. And so that means they only knew so much, like enough to survive and get us through public school and, you know, Catholicism. And that only teaches you so much mm-hmm. in terms of finance. And so the background for me, my background is we don't talk about money. This is very mm-hmm. common in Asian families. This is very common in immigrant families. This is very common in all families. There's like a sort of universal money shame. And it's also very specific to many first, second gen families because you're trying to sort of like let people know you're living the American dream. Maybe you can't pay your bills, yeah. but you're definitely still going to buy the Louis Vuitton bags. So you can, you know, flex on auntie at the family party. And so I've got a lot of theories about how this kind of stuff messes with us mentally. Of course, it was not necessarily our family's fault. Again, I mean, with my family, I'm a first-gen student. They were just doing what they could to survive. But that also told me a lot of conflicting wild stuff about money. And so my own upbringing was like, okay, we don't talk about money, but we definitely act real weird about it. We flex yeah. it in public, but we're frugal at home. Frugal flex, yeah. mm-hmm. very complicated. And then when you get older, you realize how little you do know. And so you're just carrying the sort of like broken lessons that you kind of hobbled together as a child growing up. And also, you hobbled that shit together in secret.
Totally.
Because it's not like you're talking money with your friends or your colleagues or
especially as women, I think.
Yes.
Especially as women. We're very much taught. I mean, it's like, I can't believe. Again, it's like this song is still playing somehow of just like, it is gauche. It is uncouth. It is unladylike
yeah.
to talk about money in front of people. And we don't share our salary or our age or numbers. Like, we're still doing this. And even though we're trying to scrub it from our bodies, it's very much still in there. And so a lot of us still carry that financial shame. So my background is, you know, first gen confusion, classic mixed with financial shame.
Right.
And also the sort of like, I was a very AP student overachiever first gen kid. And so it was like, get into the fanciest college possible, achieve as much as you can. We don't understand the student loan system. So, you know, my parents were just like, anak means like young one in Tagalog. Just tell me where to sign. And we just do the thing. And so we end up with a shit ton of debt to achieve in the system that actually doesn't always pay out for all of us. So it's just shitstorm, I think, is the sort of summarizing word there.
I know so many people who have that same experience where, like, their parents were immigrants, so they just didn't know how to navigate the student loan system, which is already so predatory that it's like, you have to be so on it to, like, not walk into a trap. And if you're dealing with, like, not understanding the financial system, maybe English not being your first language, like, all of that different stuff, it's such a compounding issue.
And then there's shame about that, too, that makes you sort of not want to talk about it. I think, yeah, the shame element is, like, I feel like the fact that you said that you're not, you don't have any, like, financial expertise background makes me want to listen to you more, because you've had to build your financial health by yourself and paid out debt. Like, I would much rather listen to you, frankly, somebody who, like, I can actually maybe replicate their messages. Or it sounds like most of what you're going to be sharing is mindset.
It's a lot of mindset. And thankfully, I'm able to pass the mic with every episode over to people who are accredited. You know, they've got the fancy acronyms.
Got it.
Or they've done the tests and all the things. And one thing that I learned in my self-education University of Google budgeting journey, which I talk about a little bit in the first episode of Money Please with my idol, Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista.
Awesome.
One thing that I learned is when you're taking all these book recommendations and podcast recommendations and webs, whatever, blog recommendations, Finance Ease is the worst. The worst. It's a different language. It's a difficult language already for an English speaker who is college educated, myself, and an overachiever. Like, I was already like, oh, three words in, and I'm like, oh, I already know this is not a party I'm meant to be in.
Totally.
Gross. But, like, I'm going to muscle through, because who else is going to learn this besides me? Again, first gen, like, oh, well, my parents aren't going to understand FAFSA, so I got to understand it myself and then translate it to them. And so I think that's so necessary. Like, we need more cultural financial translators, because the rest of us are just sitting in shadows being like, well, if I don't understand it, I guess it's not for me to understand. I'm going to stay in debt. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay inside of these oppressive systems, et cetera, et cetera.
So you just talked a little bit about what today's episode is about. Can you preview some of the upcoming conversations that we can look forward to on Money Please?
Yes, absolutely. So today's episode, I'm psyched as hell. It's also my birthday.
Okay. Oh, today? My God. Bury the lead.
Today's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a massive day. It is I have very manic
energy. A Scorpio.
Because it is a massive day. Double Scorpio.
Right?
Yes. Morning. I barely know what that means, to be honest. I'm a bad Scorpio.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it off air.
I was going to say, maybe somebody can tell me more about it. But yes, so today's episode is about budgeting, and it's with, I know that's, I say it in the episode, it's like an ugly word for a beautiful thing. And there's no one better in the universe to speak about it than Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista, who is the first person that I saw in like a Facebook Live in any kind of financial educational context where I was like, someone who speaks like me? Like, wait a minute, we can have fun while learning about this? Hold up, pause the Netflix. I didn't know that we could do that. And so that was so life-changing. So today's episode, you could definitely, if you're not into my energy, go avoid the first episode, because me and Tiffany we jam. We got a little bit of
this
video.
This is a great endorsement, honestly. I've already listened, but I'll go back and listen again. And I listened to it on a 2-speed, so it was very fast with you two.
Ooh.
Oh my God. I wonder if, could you hear us dancing? Because she does a lot of
It was like, very
jamming,
funny.
Dancing,
because you hear it sped up.
She's a former preschool teacher.
Oh,
and then
awesome.
Future episodes. Yes, so it's very break it down. Very much my energy. Very much explain it to me like I'm five, which is what I'm trying to go for.
Yeah, because as far as finances, I am in preschool.
We should have been told when we were five. Yeah.
Thank you. Should have been told when we were five. Exactly. I'm actually working on a book about money for young people for HarperCollins coming out spring 2023. And I keep telling people, I'm like, yeah, it's a young adult book, but like, financially, so many of us are still 12.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for everybody, you know? And all the, like, folks at my publisher who've seen it, they're like, I secretly am going to buy this book for me. I'm like, it can't be a secret.
Yeah.
Please. Like, we are all financially stunted mm-hmm. in terms of education. So future Money Please episodes, we're going to definitely this first season break down the basics first. We're going to talk about budgeting. We're going to talk about how to save money for real, like not just like put $5 every time you have a smile on your face. We're going to talk about what it is to save money when you don't have money to save. We're going to talk about paying down debt in capital letters in this economy. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about like, okay, investing, what? Someone speak at me like I can finally understand it. We're going to run through the basics so that we're all kind of have the same tool set to build from. And then we're also, oh my God, I can't wait for this one. We're going to talk about financial trauma, financial therapy, the mindset, the feels. That's a part that like you can't find in a lot of these, what I like to say, hella male, hella pale, hella stale financial education stuff.
Say that.
You gotta, hella male, hella pale, hella stale.
Totally.
That's really why I'm here, to bust through that. And we got to get to the feels of it because that's really the core.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can't wait to listen. And the first episode of Money Please is up now. And this podcast, I always forget because ours is not a bingeable podcast because it's news related, but this is such a bingeable podcast. Mm-hmm. So load them up. Make sure you're downloading them. Catch up when we get more in your feed. Thank you so much for joining us, Berna. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Amanda. Thank you, Elise. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm going to have more than one banana now.
I'll send you.
And I hope to see.
I'll send you a detailed email about what being a double Scorpio means once we're
finally, on this, my birthday, I will understand what it is to be a double. That is my gift.
Awesome. Thank you.
Beautiful. That's
beautiful. Thank you so much.
Now we are back, and to stay on the sort of like capitalism sucks, nobody has enough money or resources conversation.
Some people have more than enough.
That's true.
And that's the rub.
Elon Musk. I heard over the weekend that Elon Musk is on his way to becoming the first trillionaire.
Well, Tesla just hit $1 trillion because Hertz rental car bought 100,000 Teslas, which means that now I said this in the newsletter, but now every dating app is just going to be flooded with guys who rented a Tesla for one day being like, this is me and my Tesla.
1,000%. 1,000% that's happening. There's just going to be the same driver's license just on like 10 different dating apps.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one Tesla that they all keep renting.
It's just the same Tesla that like nobody takes anywhere. Ugh. But today we're going to talk about paid leave just because there are some updates. These spending bill negotiations are really happening. So we'll start the show with notable updates as we have them. But I mean, I read this in the newsletter this morning and I had to double check with Elise to see where she got this atrocious information. Because I could not believe that it was accurate that Joe Manchin is now threatening to withhold support for the spending bill if it includes paid leave of any kind. Almost all of his Democratic colleagues wanted 12, including the president. But for his sake, it had been scaled all the way back to 4. Even over the weekend, Joe Biden was asked at a CNN town hall, how come it's only 4 weeks? And he said, I wanted 12. Looks like all we can get is 4. Out of nowhere, I guess, two sources familiar with negotiations are telling reporters that Manchin would rather just chop the entire concept of paid leave from the plan. I'm not even sure at this point what he wants in it, what this $1 trillion even goes to.
Yeah, I'm confused about what's in it at this point now.
The things I had in my head have now been on the chopping block.
Yeah, 100%. Like, the child tax credit's only extended for a year. I mean, also, it's important to say the U.S. is one of 6 countries that does not do paid leave. And even at 4 weeks, we would be one of the lowest offerings in the world. Like, even 4 weeks is embarrassing. There are countries doing, like, 80 weeks. It's unbelievable. And so to think that, like, he would take paid leave out, and there was actually a picture that was floating around online of Kirsten Gillibrand, like,
loved it,
intensely talking to him, trying to get him to keep paid leave. But I think first of all, the fact that Manchin's been able to take out so many climate provisions is an enormous blow to this bill. But to lose paid leave, and they're also talking about chopping the Medicare expansion, which would add dental and vision and hearing for seniors, whose dental and vision and hearing famously isn't fucking great.
Right. It's like, no, that seems like a good age to start excluding people. Literally, Bernie Sanders tweeted yesterday, like, this is the United States of America. We should be able to keep teeth in people's mouths.
Right?
Like, Come on.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Why is the head not part of the body, according to our system?
Yeah, healthcare stops at the neck in the current environment. But only for the elderly. It makes no sense, and it's making me, I don't know. I mean, I think the Democrats are going to pass something, but I think if they actually go through with chopping all this stuff out, it's like, okay, you passed pointless. Something, but all we're going to remember is all the stuff that was supposed to be in it.
That's such a good point. And then it just sort of like completely neuters its political impact. I don't even know how we got to this point where we're like going to maybe completely. I mean, we're not going to chop LFP leave. I don't know why he's saying this. It sounds like he's just mad. He's getting muscled. He was asked yesterday whether he had concerns about the current paid leave proposal. And he said, I'm concerned about an awful lot of things. I also saw like a quote where he was like, oh, you know, we're at this point with me and Chuck Schumer where we're just like fighting in a room like brothers. It gets people excited. It's like, I'm glad you and the other 75-year-old white man are enjoying like your little jostling over how long our bodies can recover from like birthing a human being flying out of them. Like, I would like Joe Manchin to go, like, let alone leave bonding out of it, even though you shouldn't. I would love to see Joe Manchin go back to work after getting his midsection ripped open, all of his organs taken out and put to the side. Well, mm-hmm. like, let's just try it out. Let's see if you want to go back to work after 4 weeks, Joe. And then you got to care for an infant.
I mean, 4 weeks, you're still wearing the big diaper. Like,
no matter how you have the baby. And obviously, all of this applies to people who have children and they don't birth those children, mm-hmm. of course. But, like, I think the majority of in this country, that's how most people come into the world and how people become parents. And you're telling us that at 4 weeks in, we have to go back. I mean, I'm just thinking of like the Betches CEO who's been like very, you know, we have a Betches Moms account and they're all very transparent about the struggles. And just like imagine being like, all right, come on back. Like,
yeah,
what?
I mean, and again, just taking it away from even the birthing process, like you said, like think about a 4-week-old baby. That's like,
oh my God,
like a 4-week-old baby. Baby is not, you don't want to leave that with somebody else.
Right. It's like all, it was today, it made me think about the way that the anti-abortion people frame their arguments. They're like, here's a baby at like 12 weeks gestation. I wonder if it's like, do we reverse that? Do we like co-opt their strategy? And we're like, here's a baby at 4 weeks old. They yeah. can't do anything for themselves. They like all the things that they need. They
yeah,
are
they
fully,
can't see all the colors. Like
they can't see all the colors. They don't want to meet new people. They can't hold their head up. Like,
I mean, I think there is something to that, to being like, where actually are children at these different stages of development that we're asking parents to just leave them unsupported at that point? Because that is something. I mean, we were just talking last time I was on the pod about like people getting in Pete Buttigieg's face about yep. two like prematurely born infant twins, and it's like, well, maybe like what do people actually know about the health status of two premature infant twins? Like probably mm-hmm. nothing. Like you have no idea what it takes to take care of a baby like that. And maybe if people were more widely aware of like what a baby at 4 weeks requires, mm-hmm. people yeah. would have some more empathy. But I don't know.
I think people do. It's just
yeah,
Joe
I mean,
Manchin.
I guess it's just Joe Manchin, truly. Like, and I don't even know because with the climate stuff, it's like, okay, well, he literally owns like a coal company through like a trust right. or whatever. Like, I understand why he's doing his evil there. But with this, it's just like, what do you
He's like, it would want? Push businesses. It would push businesses. But there is enough money to just, even Kirsten Sinema this week has been like, fine, tax billionaires. Like, what, bitch?
Yes, that is the okay. one, like, good thing that we've seen is that, like, they are thinking about taxing billionaires. But to pay for what? Pay for paid leave.
That was such a sad sentence, Lise, like, 10 months into the Democratic administration and Congress, is that's the one good thing. They're thinking about taxing billionaires.
Yeah, they might consider maybe putting a tax on billionaires to pay for 1 year of childcare. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we need I wonder if there's just like not a very strong progressive movement in West Virginia that they can really muscle him, and like that's what it's gonna take. I don't know. But I feel like people need to swarm Joe Manchin's office with their 4 weeks old. Like literally just
yes.
I mean, nobody has time, But like, fucking go there in your diaper with your newborn.
We should, like, here you go. We should give him one of those like things they use in like high school. Like the egg or whatever, or like the crying baby. they use those on Love Island too. And like, see how Joe Manchin does like going back to work with it. Like, he has to work.
That's so
funny. Has to be on it, the Senate, but also he does have to care for the like the egg or whatever.
Exactly. We chatted for a long time with Berna, so I'm going to save some of our Facebook discussion for next week. But because we started talking about this today, I did want to flag one of the revelations. So this week is like, we've said this a lot, but like reckoning for Facebook. But this week I kind of have compared to like, I try for our listeners to differentiate like what all of this new news means. And I feel like this is sort of the period like when all the Trump tell-all books came out. It's like we knew all this crazy stuff was happening. We had drips and drabs, but like here it is. We have the documents. We have employees saying this is exactly what happened. The reports were right all along. So we'll detail them in detail maybe tomorrow or later next week. But one thing I read this morning was that one of the leaked documents alleged that Mark Zuckerberg was directly involved in a 2019 decision to reinstate a video that falsely claimed abortions were, quote, never medically necessary. Sometimes abortions are medically necessary. There can be conditions
very
that
much
parent
so.
Has, like that you can die. This happens, read a book written before 1850 and women are dying constantly.
Yeah, like that's completely insane.
And because Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley asked him to. So it was originally flagged with a message from like the AMA and the Obstetrics Association, and Mark Zuckerberg personally intervened so that it could be kept up. So that's sort of our starting point. And for the rest of the week, we will tell you some of the other things we're finding and how we can potentially act on them. Don't forget to check out the first episode of Money Please, which is about budgeting with Berna. I highly recommend it. She's the best. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.